Maybe. Yes, sir!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the You're Still Out Golf Podcast. I am your host, JT, sitting here in our home away from home, our official podcast studio here at Lincoln Park Golf Club. Been a little bit since we have been recording from the official studio, but happy to get back out here to Lincoln Park here on a Friday morning, about 40 degrees, and was proud of my Lincoln brethren out there on the first tee, teeing it up on a Friday morning here in Oklahoma City. College football season for some not going the way we thought it would. For others, still in the game. Regardless, that's a time on Saturdays to get out to Lincoln Park or any of our city golf courses when there is an 11 a.m. kickoff. The Twilight Fee starts at kickoff time, a great time to save a little money, play a little golf if you're either soured on your favorite squad or you are just not a college football fan, a great time to save some money, play some golf out at Lincoln Park. Podcast today, an awesome interview with our very good friend, Logan McAllister, Logie Mac, as he is affectionately known here on the You're Still Out Golf Podcast. Corn Ferry Tour season in the books. Gave Logan a little time to decompress before getting him back on the podcast. And we're going to cover in a sundry of topics with Logan coming off his first full season on the Corn Ferry Tour. Without further delay, let's get to that interview. All right, Logie, it's good to have you back. Good to see you. I think that, like I said in the intro, I gave you a little time to decompress. It certainly looks like you've been taking full advantage of that decompression. But how's your fall been, man?
It's been good. It's been nice to have a little bit of time at home away from planes and rental cars and hotels. So I've enjoyed my time here, but I'm starting to get a little stir crazy.
You know, it's funny. I put together our list of topics to chat on. I didn't think about going deep dive on the like hotel priority points and the airline priority points scene. I bet after this year, you've got some good pointers about how to leverage all the rewards memberships.
Yeah, I always stay. We stay in Airbnbs a lot, but if I'm staying in a hotel, I always stay in Hilton. And if I'm flying, I always fly United, even if it's a little bit more, because it'll be worth. It's worth more to me than next year if I can max out what I'm doing with that, so I get the free bags and upgrades and all that. So I think I've done a good job of that. I'm sure I'll learn more as we keep going on here.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if you're.
So that was a shameless plug I got for United and Hilton.
I mean, at this point in this pod, it's like free ad central. Like, we can talk about whoever we want to, you know, until we get an airline sponsor, you know, we can probably just flaunt whoever we want. I'm going to bounce around a little bit on you today because I have all sorts of, you know, topics, some stuff about your play this year, some stuff about places you visited, some Ryder Cup stuff. But I actually want to start with something that popped up a few weeks ago that I don't think anybody here in Oklahoma was expecting, and that is this this Oak Tree Pro Scratch event, right? I'm genuinely curious because I haven't got to talk to anybody about it. Like, has this always been a thing? Is this a new thing? How did it come about? You know. You guys exactly, I'm sure you're not getting paid to be out there, so it seems like a bit of a doing it for fun. But just give folks the backstory on it and then how you got involved in it and what it is, and we can get into results, if you will. But let's start with just the backstory on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think they started maybe around like 2010 or 2011, and whatever COVID came through, they stopped doing it, so they haven't had it since 2019. And, you know, we've actually had a bunch of new pros that have joined, including myself. And I think they just figured it was a good time to kind of start it back up. So Ryan Munson, who was kind of the tournament chairman, if you will, texted us probably in, I don't know, March or April and said, hey, we're going to try to do this again. Would you guys be on board for this? And everyone was on board with it. I mean, it ended up being a fun event. It was competitive, but at the same time, it was kind of like a member guest type feel. So I think all of us enjoyed it. It's something that I mean, you saw the field. The field actually ended up being really good, and I think it's going to keep getting better every single year. So it'll be something that all of us look forward to every single year, which will be really fun.
Yeah, the field was crazy. Like, we were talking about it. I think we did a podcast that week or two before after the field was announced, and it was literally, now part of this has happened to be where it fell in the grand scheme of the schedule, but you could legitimately make an argument it was like the best field of that particular week in the entire world of golf, between like an off week from the PGA Tour, Korn Ferry's over. I don't know what the DP World Tour was doing that week, but I guess, like, why do you think so many guys like opted in to do it? Just because of the schedule, or because of like it seemed like a cool idea or a way to keep the game sharp? I was just surprised that many high level professional golfers would agree to, yes, what you just said, it kind of amounts to a member guest in the, but it's really, you know, scratch guys that are really good out there pairing up with pros. So what was the appeal for so many guys to play in it?
I think that kind of speaks to the culture of what we have going at Oaktree, where it's a professionals club. Like, they try to help us out as much as possible. And whenever someone came to the table and said, hey, we need the golf course for 3 days, like, the club is all in on it. So it makes us kind of become all in on it too. And that's just how we are. Like, all of us spend a lot of time together. We'd be playing together at home anyways. You just add an extra, whatever, 20 or 30 guys that are playing in it that aren't necessarily members that play there every day. So I think everyone is excited to be able to be competitive, because like you said, like, there wasn't much going on that week. And even the guys that are on tour, a lot of them already have their card locked up. So they're not all stressed out about these fall events. So they're not going to worry about going to kind of play a not quite as serious tournament. And all of that combined, like, you know, like I said, we knew about it in March or April, and everyone was excited about it then. And I think once it got closer and closer, everyone was looking forward to it. And it was something that everyone pretty much circled on their schedule, including arguably the best player in the world right now.
That would be one Victor Hovland. I thought it was great. Any, you know, yeah, you talk about it, Oaktree being a professionals club. Anytime the pro scratch is getting a write up in Golf Digest, you know that it's a pretty high level event. But yes, our man Vic wins the pro scratch. Did he team up with was it Ian Davis was his partner? I'm kind of doing this from memory.
Ian Davis. So they pretty much had I would argue that Ian Davis was probably the best scratch there, and Victor is probably the best pro there. Not probably, he was the best pro there.
I mean, yeah, I don't know what you call that. It's not really ringers when everybody knows that they're the two best in their category. So it's not typical member guest. Oh, this guy brought in a ringer. But it was cool to see. So, you know, again, fortunate in the state of Oklahoma to have so many guys that have ties to the state that really enjoy living or at least spending a lot of time in the state. And to see that, yes, if not the number one ranked golfer in the world, certainly the guy who is playing the best right now, playing something like this and get the victory. Pretty cool stuff. All right. Well, thanks for diving into that. I know that, you know, since it wasn't open to the public, not a lot of folks got the inside scoop on what was going on out there. So thanks for diving into that a little bit. But let's talk about your season. I kind of have a whole umbrella here of just kind of KFT season kind of things. Talk about, we've gotten to text about this a little bit offline, but what was the difference in your kind of mid-season run, right? Because at one point you got up to, I believe it was as high as ninth in the KFT standings, to that end of the season stretch where, you know, you're having trouble making cuts. Like, was there a particular like skill, a particular part of your game that was suffering during the end stretch that was really moving and grooving in that mid-season run, whenever you kind of just look like, if not unbeatable, like, man, we're just on cruise control?
Yeah, I think it was kind of a combination of a few things. Like, I always think that putting is a strength of mine. And through that good stretch, I putted really well. Through the bad stretch, I didn't putt well. But there's more to it than that. Like, I played every event this year. So I played 26 weeks in 32 weeks, and five of that was a break. And so it was, I'm sure the numbers are a little off there, but it was a lot of golf in a very small amount of time. And if I don't get my PGA Tour card through Q School, I can promise you that I won't do that. And that's not necessarily an excuse for how I played, but I definitely manage my schedule a little bit better next year. And I think, you know, when you've only played 13 events, which was kind of where my good stretch was, you don't feel it as much as when you're playing the 21st and 22nd, 23rd event.
Right.
And I thought that I was invincible going into it, thinking I could go play every one and stuff. And that's just not realistic. It's hard to have your A game for that many weeks in that short of a time, just because not only the physical fatigue, but the mental fatigue too. Like when you're missing cuts and finding stuff to do on a Saturday and Sunday in a town that's probably not, you know, doesn't have much to do. It just takes a little bit of a toll on you, and I let it get to me a little bit too much. I got to be better about that too. So a combination of skill-based stuff, like I'm talking about with putting, and then some of it that is controllable, but I didn't control very well.
Well, on the playing, kind of the playing too much per se, it sounds like it was sort of like got you coming and going, right? When you're playing really well, my assumption is I need to keep playing so that I can keep racking up, you know, these high finishes and racking up these points. And when you start playing poorly, it's like, oh, now I've not gotten any points, and so I need to keep playing. Was it both of those things that kind of led you to the kind of over scheduling?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I mean, exactly like you said, like when you're on a heater, if you will, like you don't want to stop playing golf because you feel like you can just go out and have a chance to win every single week. But everyone in golf knows that there's a very fine line between your best golf and your worst golf. And I think that that's not like, in hindsight, you know, yes, that's true. Like you might be playing well, you should play. But at the same time, if you're scheduled to have a week off and you don't take the week off, which I did once last year, it's probably best to stick to what your plan is, because if you had that decision in the first place, it's probably, if not the right decision, at least the one that can clear your head a little bit better. So like you said, when you're not playing well, it's definitely a lot tougher to take weeks off. But for me next year, I'll get that in my head a little bit more that, hey, I don't want to do what I did last year as far as like, you know, yes, I play great golf, but the next week you're not guaranteed to play great golf. So it's better to have a little bit of time at home and reset a little bit and come in fresh the next week. And your good golf might be even better at that point.
No, I think that's probably pervasive at every level of golf. When you're playing well, you want to keep playing, and when you're playing poorly, it's like, man, I got to get out there and keep playing so that I can figure this thing out. So, even more impactful when you're doing it for a living. Well, on a prior pod, I think it was after the KFT Tour Championship, like the only silver lining for a Logie Mac fan and being back potentially on the KFT next year is getting to see you again down at Jimmy at the Compliance Solutions. But I wanted to kind of look back on that event, you know, first year of the Compliance Solutions, now that you've had a little bit of time to think on that. How did you feel it went for a first year of a professional event at Jimmy? I know we got to talk about it a little bit after it was all said and done, but how do you think it went first year down there, and what do you expect to be different, if anything, for 2024?
Yeah, I mean, I think for first event, it was great. They had a decent fan turnout. You know, the weather ended up not being great for fans because it was so hot on the weekend, but yeah. I was disappointed with how I played, but as far as an event standpoint, I don't think it could have been any better. The golf course was great. The hospitality and everything was great. And I'm looking forward to hopefully not playing there next year, but if I'm on Corn Ferry, obviously I'll definitely be there and excited to get another run at Jimmy. It's funny, Jimmy, you know, when we were in school, we all talk about it that are up here now. It felt kind of easy because you play there every day and you know how to play. And then you come back and you're like, well, this place is actually like a little bit trickier than I think we thought at first. So I think maybe next year there might be a few more trips down to Norman on my agenda to get down there and feel like I'm in school again a little bit, because it felt a lot easier when we were in school.
You know what's interesting, and I'm curious, I don't want to lead you to an answer here, but I, you know, not a lot of the OU guys, you know, played all that well this past year, and I wondered if there was anything to, you know, you guys, you know, kind of be done in May, you know, when school is over, in terms of playing there regularly and be playing a lot of, you know, AM events or being gone for the summer and maybe didn't ever, you know, not ever, but rarely played it in those kind of conditions over the summer. Was there anything to that, like coming back during the summer and playing a high level event at Jimmy, where you weren't playing there that much during the summer while you were in school?
Yeah, there might be a little bit to that, but I think it was more like, at least for me, you know, being from Oklahoma and having a decent amount of people out there watching, I haven't had an event like that besides a college event. And when you're by yourself, you know, you feel like you're on your own little island in a pro event, and in a college event, you know, there's people are spread out.
Right.
And so I think for me, more like, I don't know that I handled the pressure of it very well, which it's just a different pressure. Like, it's not the same pressure as if you're trying to go win a golf tournament. It's like, you probably shouldn't have pressure on yourself. You should feel more comfortable doing that. But for me, it was like, I don't know, I just didn't feel as comfortable as I probably thought that I was going to and that I should have. So, and whether that be, I don't know, I wasn't trying to like put on a show for these people or anything, but it's just a little bit different. Like Korn Ferry events, there's not that many people watch, and there's not that many people that are looking at what's going on, to be honest with you. So it was just a little bit of a, I enjoyed it. I don't know if I was or what kind of came.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. I think most folks would think, okay, like going to be super comfortable home golf course, da 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 da. And it maybe can be a little bit of the flip side of, everybody's thinking I'm going to play well, so I need to play well. And if I'm not playing well, like what's going on? So very interesting. Yeah, you're right. Golf is a fickle beast, both on the mental side and just in terms of what's going well one day is going poorly the next. So let's stay on the Korn Ferry venues and the Korn Ferry Tour stops. You know, a full year out there, and like you said, you played darn near every event. Did you have a favorite, might be the wrong way to put it, but a stop that was you really, really enjoyed and maybe you didn't expect to, or one that really treated you well that you would shout out in terms of looking back over the last year?
Yeah, I liked the place we played in Knoxville, Colson Hills. The golf course was great. It was kind of low key. Like there wasn't some big, nice clubhouse or anything. The food wasn't great, but like the whole event had a good vibe to it. There was a bunch of people that came out and watched. And I think maybe part of the reason I liked it is because it was another college town. It reminded me of Norman a little bit. So all that combined made that. A lot of that is golf course heavy. Like, I loved the golf course, so that's probably, I'm biased towards good golf courses, so that's probably half of it. But the event as a whole was really fun.
Well, I'm going to –
I played well.
I was about to say, like, did you play well? Because that, it doesn't matter. Like, I remember joking with, I don't know who it was. Maybe it was Keith, actually, our fellow podcast host here, about, you know, there was a course, I can't remember what it was, that everybody was raving about. And he's like, oh, man, I hate that place. And I was like, well, how'd you play? He's like, oh, I played terrible. I was like, well, there you go, bud. So I do think that golf courses that you wouldn't like otherwise, if you play well, it's like, oh, man, that place is pretty good. And places that you played terrible, I was like,
yeah,
this place,
exactly,
this place is a dump. I'm going to follow up on some golf course architecture, golf courses stuff in general. So don't let me forget to come back to that. But before we leave KFT season, I'm curious at, like, what was your golf highlight of the year, maybe shot of the year? You can go down a whatever path you want to take this. And maybe it wasn't even on the Korn Ferry Tour. Maybe it was some sort of, you know, off week. I played this course. But if you had to say, what was your golf highlight of this past year, what do you got for us?
It was probably the event that I lost in the playoff to in Florida. Because I was coming off, like, that was our eighth event of the year, and I had made one cut. And so, you know, you just get down this kind of, not dark hole, but, like, just it's just a tough spot to be when you're on the road all the time. You're not playing well. And it was very refreshing. Like, I was working hard. I felt like I was getting better and stuff. And I finally kind of, you don't get to see improvement very often in golf. And for me, that was like even more so than a lot of events in college, because I had a pretty good college career where I didn't have very many pockets of struggling. Like, that was my first real stretch of really, really struggling. And so to see hard work and stuff pay off in that way, that was probably the most I don't know if enjoyable is the right word, satisfying, whatever it may be, but that was the week that I'll remember for a long time and try to draw off of for future. Cause you know, I'm going to struggle more in professional golf at some point. I'll go through a patch like that and I'll be able to lean on kind of that experience and seeing myself get out of a little bit of a rut. So I think for now and down the road, that'll be the most beneficial week that I might ever have.
Yeah, I thought you might go there, and you're obviously talking about the Suncoast Classic where got into a playoff and lost to, I believe it was like a 45 or 50 foot bomb to Scott Gajewski was it the first playoff hole? I think it was.
Yeah, first playoff hole.
I thought you might bring that one up as the highlight because it did seem like a huge kickstart to the rest of the year, and certainly that midsummer stretch where you kind of went on a tear. And again, we feel like this is the third time we've said it as we've been talking that golf one day is like what's going on to man. And I remember I know how to play this game, so I could see how that would be a big highlight for the year. Can you think back to a shot of the year or a shot that really stands out that was super challenging and you pulled it off, or maybe it was something that was more of a super disciplined and made it happen? Can you think back to one of those?
Yeah, in Kansas City this year, that would have been maybe two events after Florida. I make the cut and shoot two under or something on Saturday, and you drop down the board on Corn Ferry if you do that. So me and I was playing with Quaid on Sunday, and we're like, you know, at the 8 a.m. tee time, 5 hours ahead of leaders. And I played a really nice round of golf. I get to 18, and it's a long uphill par five. And I kind of pipe one into a tree on the left, kicks out the drive wind. It was a driving distance hole. So I asked the guys that were keeping it, I was like, how far did that go? They said 212 yards. It's like a 630 yard par five uphill into this like really tight layup and stuff. And I hit a bad layup to 220 out of the rough to this elevated green. And I hit it to like, I don't know, 15, 20 feet, which was, I was just lucky to hit it on the green and then made that. And that ended up being top 10. So that third shot after that whole mess of a drive and layup, I still remember that one as one like, well, I actually pulled a shot off that, you know, those shots are hard to pull off. You try to do it all the time and sometimes you're okay with hitting a decent shot, but it was one that I actually kind of took advantage of and it didn't end up mattering as much, but like that birdie put me in a much better spot. I think I would have been like T20 if I wouldn't have made birdie. It was a huge, huge jump in spots.
You know, it's funny. I literally didn't know it was coming to answer that question, but it's funny, like the shots for a professional that stick with them versus a hacker where it would have been like, oh, I had no business going around this tree and over this water. And I just closed my eyes and swung and it worked out where, you know, you say like, I can envision the shot that you are talking about. But I think that, you know, it just seems like, okay, it was like you hit a 5-iron to 15 feet and made the putt, but like it's circumstantial and it's after it potentially kind of throwing away dollars and points from a 212 yard drive. Or if you would have said, yep, it was a 5-iron from, you know, 212 yards and I hit it 15 feet. And you're like, huh, that was the shot of the year. But I think the circumstances and knowing how hard those shots are, it's interesting that would stand out. Let's go back to golf courses. So you kind of scooped me there talking about Holston Hills, being a place that you really enjoyed. I don't know. I know that you haven't probably got to the point where you told us you didn't take a lot of weeks off. So you might not have played a lot of golf courses outside of those on, tour, but maybe call out, I know you're a golf architecture buff. I know you really enjoy, interesting golf courses and well thought out courses. So maybe go down a list of courses that you really stood out to you on the KFT, and then if you did play any golf courses outside of your Korn Ferry Tour schedule, call out one or two of those that really got your juices flowing in 2023.
I loved where we played in Columbus, the second to last event. It was an old Alistair McKenzie, but it's been kind of ruined from that. But there were still like really good greens. We actually played it was firm, which was one of the only firm golf courses that we played all year. Hmm. And yeah, I mean, I enjoyed that a lot. And it was hard too. Like I shot, I don't know, two over the first 2 days and made the cut by two shots or something. So that's literally, I think they said that was the only time that we had a over par cut on Korn Ferry, which to me, like, we play all these easy golf courses. It kind of narrows the field. Like, there's not as much of a skill gap because you don't have shots that require as much skill. Like, everyone that's playing on the Korn Ferry, whether you're 180th on the points or first, like, we can all go out and hit a ball in the fairway in a 60-yard wide fairway. And we can all go hit a 100-yard wedge shot to 10 feet. But, like, in Columbus, the golf course asked you to do more than just that. Like, you had to hit it in certain spots on the greens. You had to hit it in certain spots on the fairways, or else you didn't have a chance to make birdie, and you're probably grinding for par. So that was probably the one that, besides Holston Hills, that was probably the other one that really stood out to me. But I really, besides, like you said, besides the courses that we played on the Korn Ferry this year, I really didn't get to play many other golf courses, if any. I'm trying to think after you asked that, if I've even played any other golf courses besides Oak Tree and the 26 golf courses we played on Korn Ferry. And to be honest with you, nothing comes to mind that I've even played.
Just total grind your tail off. One of my other like side questions was going to be like, tell me like around a buddy's golf that you played this year that you really enjoyed. It sounds like it was all business for Logie Mac in 23.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that I could have gone out and played different courses in these cities that we're going to. Cause I mean, we went to some places that have golf courses that I would obviously love to go play, but the reality of it is when you're on the road like that, like you're not going to go play one of those courses on Monday because you're probably trying to recover a little bit. Like you just don't have that much time to go find somewhere to play one, find someone that'll host you if it's a private place two, and three, like you just don't feel like it a lot of times. So I at the beginning of the year, I played a lot more golf on the actual golf course. And towards the end of it, it was 9 holes Monday, 9 holes Tuesday, Pro-Am Wednesday, and then go out and play on Thursday.
Well, you know, some to aspire to, right? You get that PGA Tour card in place where you're setting your schedule a little bit easier. You can finagle some of those side golf courses. And I know that, I know Zach Blair is super famous for always like sniffing out, a tough to get into spot in the week of a PGA Tour event. So something to shoot for.
Yeah. We always talk about it at Oak Tree, like we want to go do a trip or something, and then we start thinking about it and like, bro, just stay at home.
Well, speaking of aspire to, I want to talk some Ryder Cup with you. I know that everybody loves to have a Ryder Cup take or two. I don't know what week that would have fallen for you in terms of schedule if there was a KFT event that week, so I don't know how much of it you caught, but let's just start with general reactions to Ryder Cup and I guess specifically why a very talented group of Americans seemingly cannot go across to Europe and get the job done.
Yeah, we were off. That was between Columbus and the Tour Championship, so I actually got to watch quite a bit of it. First morning, I watched a lot of it, and then it just didn't look like they didn't have like the fire that Europe always has, and that when the U.S. has done well, that they tend to have. And you know, you can say, well, we got the best 12 players in the world, why should we not win? There's so much more to it. I mean, compared to a college team, like OU's been successful, not necessarily because we have the top 10 players in the country. And to be honest with you, for a long time, we didn't even have two of the top 10 players in the country, and they were still successful. I mean, when they won the national championship, on paper, if you went and looked at the five guys' rankings, you wouldn't have been impressed by it. And I compare that a little bit to the Ryder Cup of like, the reason that OU's been successful is the same reason that I think U.S. hasn't been as successful in the Ryder Cup. There's just not like the gelling and the camaraderie that Europe probably has. And, you know, a lot of these guys are best friends, but it's all in like kind of pockets. Like these guys are friends with these guys and these are separate from these. Like the Cantlay and Shoffley, they're their own little deal. And the JT and Spieth. And then you have all these different dynamics that I don't know. To me, you know, I don't know anything truly about it because I wasn't in the team room or anything. But to me, it just doesn't look like they gel.
I've been trumpeting the kind of best 12 players shtick a little bit that, you know, at that level, I mean, yes, from a world rankings perspective or where guys are finishing on the FedEx Cup points list, it's easy to say that the U.S. has the 12th best. But you just said it in relation to Korn Ferry Tour guys and how, you know, small the skill gap can be. I mean, at that level, I mean, we're talking about, you know, 12 of the best players in the world being on the European side, regardless of where they're ranked. And I think that the talent gap, if you will, gets a little bit overblown every, whether we're playing in Europe or playing in the U.S. And so it does seem like that for whatever reason, and it's, I guess specifically when it is on foreign soil, that the ability to kind of overcome whatever those intangibles are has been the thing that the U.S. has not been able to do. And it's so, like, what do you make of how it does seem very lopsided when it comes to if you're playing a home Ryder Cup? Like, what is that? Even when we win, we being the U.S., like, why do you conject that playing at home, so to speak, is such a big deal in the Ryder Cup?
I mean, when you have people rooting for you, you end up feeling better about yourself, I would say. You know, it feels better to have those people screaming your name instead of screaming someone else. I mean, that sounds simple, but it's like, you know, would you rather have someone rooting for you or not rooting for you? That's basically the question.
Right.
I think we'll probably see that in New York in 25, because that's going to be a serious, like, you think that's an advantage going to wherever they were at, Rome or for Europe, going to New York for the U.S. If they don't win that Ryder Cup, then I think we're gonna have some serious issues, because there's just a hostility, like, towards the other team. You're not gonna feel as good, which is gonna make you tense up and not hit as many good golf shots if you're getting yelled at instead of getting rooted for.
Yeah, it seems like it's a bit of the opposite of, like, feeling the pressure of having a bunch of people rooting for you. Like, if, you know, you're following you and Norman or out at a college event, where it's like, if you are having people root against you, that's got to feel very tough. And yes, when you pull something off, it's great. You know, it's like you stick it to them. But it's like, well, what if I don't pull this off? I know I'm about to get roasted, you know, from this crowd of like 10,000 people in these grandstands. That's got to be it's almost like a don't mess up versus let's play well sort of thing. It seems like to me,
yeah,
that's the way the U.S. seems to approach it when they go to Europe.
Yeah, for sure. It's they like, even from the jump, like that first match when Victor chipped in on the first hole, like the U.S. looked deflated after one hole. But part of that is because, like, he does this in front of home fans. The crowd's already pumped up at 7 a.m. in the morning. Like, they're not going to get less pumped up as the day goes on. Like, they had something that kickstarted them immediately. And I don't know if the U.S. dealt with that as well. I don't know how you deal with it well, but I mean, surely they can figure it out at some point. But yeah, like you said, like you don't want to get rooted against, and when the other side has momentum and those fans on top of that, it's just tough to come back from.
Well, I definitely got to get your take on the Joe LaCava situation that kind of erupted there. I believe it was on Saturday, so day two, late in the day. Some folks may not know that Joey LaCava Jr. has caddied for you out there on the Korn Ferry Tour. He was able to tell us a couple great insider stories during the KFT Pro-Am that we'll leave off air on the LaCava Tiger front. But knowing that you were probably more tied in than most to the Big Joe versus Rory spat on the 18th green at Marco Simone, I'm curious if there was any banter or fun text message exchange between you and little Joey about what was happening over there with his dad.
His dad didn't give him too much insight into that, but I can promise you that I've never seen someone get asked more questions on the range than Joe Jr. got asked that next week that we were there. It seemed like every single person that walked by was like, hey, what actually happened there? What was going on? And I don't think that his dad didn't give him too much info besides, like, Rory was, you know, talking to me all day, so I was going to talk back the second that my player does something good. And, like, in my eyes, I wasn't there to see what was actually going on, but I mean, I liked it. It gave him a little bit of juice. Like, the last day had some juice because of that moment and because of that putt too that Cantlay made on 18. So to me, I get where it could have looked bad. There was angles of it that was didn't look great on Joe, but you know, he's human too. Like, he wants to get excited. He wants to have a reason to do something. And golf honestly probably needs a little bit more of that. We just never see any sort of argument or any sort of, I don't know what the word would be, but any sort of excitement like that where people are actually like mad at each other ever. So I think it was probably good for the U.S. side and good for Joe to probably get that out too. He never gets to actually be excited on the golf course, especially with the guy he works for. He doesn't get very excited either.
Well, yeah, and especially like kind of the whole exhibition nature of the Ryder Cup. Yeah, I mean, everybody takes it super seriously. They want to win, and it's amazing competition at the highest level. Ultimately, it is a total entertainment product, and if you can't get fired up and you know, react in that setting, like, when are you ever going to be able to? And yes, golf needs a little bit more of that, where normally, you know, in a kind of a buttoned up run-of-the-mill PGA Tour event, you're not going to get as much of that. So yeah, I thought it was pretty overblown that everybody was for the side that was beating up LaCava about it. It seemed a little bit much. So, but I, it's hilarious that everybody was, I can see, I mean, I was curious. I mean, that's the, one of the first things I thought when I saw it was, oh my gosh, I can't wait to ask Logie about this whenever the next time we talk. So I can see why everybody was asking little Joe on the range about it the next week.
Yeah, I think he was getting tired of the question, because every time he'd answer it, no one would be, you know, they're expecting some sort of like juice.
Right.
And he was just like, I mean, I think they kind of got into a little bit of a disagreement, and he yelled a little bit, and Rory wasn't happy about that. That was basically the gist of it.
Good stuff. All right. Well, tell me about kind of the upcoming schedule. And actually, this is a little bit for me, because I'll admit I need to know these things a little better, but definitely for our listeners, talk about Q School and Final Stage and how that works with, you know, how folks finished on the KFT and what you're exempted into. Kind of talk process for the remainder of this year and then what that looks like for your schedule in particular.
Yeah, so I finished 43rd, 44th, somewhere in there on the Korn Ferry list. So I'm fully exempt for next year on Korn Ferry. But Q School changed this year to where there's 5 PGA Tour cards. So the top 60 on the Korn Ferry points list were exempt into Final Stage. So you don't have to go play. You can just go play a full Korn Ferry schedule next year and try to get your PGA Tour card. But for me, it's like you can get your PGA Tour card two places in all of golf, basically. And that's at Victoria National at the Tour Championship, where guys just got them a month or so ago. And then now it's at Q School. So for me, it's a no-brainer to go play it. So I'll go play that December 14th through 17th down in Jacksonville. And basically it's go for broke, finish top five. If I go finish 160th, it doesn't matter. Doesn't hurt my status or anything. I'll still have the full season next year on Korn Ferry. So excited for that opportunity, because in the past, you know, you go finish 45th and you got, you know, you just, well, let's go play again in January. So hope for a great week and be able to play PGA Tour events next year instead of Korn Ferry. But the top 40 get their Korn Ferry cards. So for the guys that are not currently on the Korn Ferry Tour, top 40 is big. And then obviously top five would be a huge bonus. But for me, it's just go out there and try to finish top five.
So two quick follow-up questions there. Just a clarifying question. So you said top 60 on the KFT points. Is that inclusive of the, whatever it was, 30 guys that got their PGA Tour cards, or is that more like 31 through 90?
No, 31 through 60. So it's actually, yeah, this is probably a big clarification, but so this top 75 keep their Korn Ferry card fully exempt for the next season,
okay,
but only the top 60 were exempt in Final Stage. So the guys that are 61 through 75, like Patrick, those guys, if they wanted to, could go play Q School, but they'd have to go back to Second Stage. So that's where the whether to play or not's a little bit interesting, because you go spend $3,500 to go play second stage and then have to go to final stage too. I mean, I would still do it in that scenario because you still have a chance at a tour card and you got nothing else going on. But I could see where guys wouldn't do that. But yeah, so the top 75 keep their card, top 60 are exempt to final stage. So I'm in that top 60 and I'm thankful for that. But I think there'll be, I'd say of those 15 guys that finish 61 to 75, they'll probably be at least 10 or 12 that'll go play second stage. And then you never know, one of those guys might end up getting their card just from doing that.
Right. Gotcha. And the second follow-up, what golf course is that being played at in Jax?
It's at TPC Sawgrass, the Dyes Valley, so not the Players' Championship one, but the other one. And then right across the street at Sawgrass Country Club is the other course. So same setup as Q School has been, where you play each course twice. It's a full field, no cut. And top 40, you get paid. So you can make your entry fee back. So for me, like, yes, top five matters, but at the same time, like, I'd like to have my entry fee back if I don't get a PGA Tour card. So at least go finish top 40.
Top 40. So we're pulling for top five, but top 40 would at least net zero us for the week. We'll be following it. I feel like they throw at least maybe the final round or part of that up on like a streaming, like on PGA Tour or ESPN Plus, or there's something that you can watch a little bit of that, folks. So give that a Google. We'll try to post it on the Twitter feed. So when it gets a little closer, you can check up on the final stage Q School proceedings.
On that point with the TV, I think they're actually, it's either on Peacock or Golf Channel. I want to say they have at least the final two rounds. I might be wrong on that, but I know they at least have like the full final round because last year they did the coverage and it wasn't a full blown thing, but I think this year it's going to be more of a full blown thing. So I'm sure people listening can find that.
Yeah. Cause I feel like I watched, wasn't Chris, I mean, he was right there last year and I feel like I was watching him on TV, kind of finishing out his final round. So I know it'll be out there to watch. Good stuff, man. Well, obviously we wish you well, down in Jax. And then, you know, I know we keep threatening, I don't think we've gotten together to play since Compliance Solutions. So now that you're back in town, we'll have to get out there and get a little golf in ourselves. I'm not going to be much of a competitive marker for you, but we get out there and have some fun.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on, JT. I always enjoy it.
Feeling is mutual there, bud. All right, folks. After a couple weeks off, got you an episode. Hope you enjoyed that chat with our guy, Logie Mack. Frankly, the weather has been much too nice to be inside podcasting. It has truly been weather to get outside and enjoy the walk.